You hear a school has low test scores, you assume the rest.
A rough building. Rough behaviorally, rough academically, and just rough all the way around.
From Michigan Radio, this is State of Opportunity. I'm Dustin Dwyer. This hour, a rare behind-the-scenes look at nearly every aspect of how kids are being educated at one low-performing school, Congress Elementary in Grand Rapids. You'll meet a group of third graders, witness their highs and their lows.
I got bullied in first grade. I got bullied in second grade.
What kind of education do kids get at Congress Elementary? The real truth behind the test scores.
Yeah, that old saying of putting all your eggs in one basket. And I feel like sometimes that is what the state does with the meat, is they put all of our eggs in the meat basket.
This hour, the big test. This is State of Opportunity from Michigan Radio. I'm Dustin Dwyer. This hour, the big test.
I don't even want to take it.
Why not?
I'm not a big fan of tests.
Musa is a third grader at Congress Elementary in Grand Rapids. He carries himself like an adult, his hands casually in his pockets, shoulders back. He stands on the edge of a cracked asphalt basketball court. It's picture day at Congress, and Musa has on a red t-shirt with black sleeves. He says it's for special occasions only.
It's your special occasion shirt? Tell me what it says on it.
Destined for greatness.
Did you pick it?
Yeah.
Yeah, why did you like what it says?
Because I didn't want it to be something bad, so I put destined for greatness so people think I'm good.
Yeah.
Not bad.
Musa is the kind of kid most parents want their kids to go to school with. He's kind, hardworking, smart, ambitious. The thing is, if you're doing research about a school, you really won't learn much about the kids there or whether they too are destined for greatness. All you'll get to know about kids at a school comes in the form of a test score. And in Michigan, the score you'll see comes from a test called the MEEP. As a third grader, Musa is about to take the MEEP for the first time in his life. He's not excited.
Why don't you like tests?
Because sometimes you could get the wrong answer and I don't like that.
You don't like being wrong?
Mm-mm.
Why do you think you have to take tests?
I think to get smarter. I don't know, to get your brain working and stuff. Maybe they make you take the test and then make your brain get working and then they do all the other learning stuff.
That's what you think?
Yeah.
The test is for you to learn?
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Have you ever learned anything from a test?
No.
Musa may not be completely clear on what the test is for, but we know. It's not for him to learn. It's not for him at all. It's for us, the adults. It's to let us know whether his school is teaching him the basics. For a third grader, the MEEP will ask kids to round numbers, to count the syllables in a word, to read a passage and write a little bit about what they read. As citizens and as taxpayers, we ask schools to prove that their kids are learning these things so that we have some form of accountability. But since the era of mandated student testing started a couple decades ago, we've come to use the test scores for more than just accountability. We use the scores to tell us where to send our kids and where not to send our kids, where to buy a house and where not to buy a house. And that means test scores end up affecting house prices quite a lot. And that affects city tax revenue, which affects city services. We're talking ultimately about millions of dollars in economic impact. The fate of entire cities, all of it, resting on how a child, as young as 8 years old, performs on a single test. And of course, the test doesn't tell you everything you need to know about a school. We know that. But what do you see when you look behind the numbers? This fall, I spent 6 weeks trying to answer that question at Congress Elementary. I saw the school from the inside. A rare look at nearly every aspect of how its kids were being educated. In this hour, we bring you the story of what I learned in those 6 weeks. And the test? Well, the test doesn't even begin to tell the story. Congress Elementary is in a historically designated three-story brick building in the East Hills neighborhood of Grand Rapids. The school was built in 1923. In old photos, the school looks classic, respectable. Today, the tall windows have been mostly filled in, and instead of natural light, the school is filled with a kind of dull fluorescent glow. The doors on each end of the building are brown, imposing, and worn. About 200 kids go to school here.
Okay, so when we go up the stairs, one hand on the rail, please. Choose any seat, but don't touch anything, and take everything to your seat. Take your backpack to your seat. Ladies in the back, I hope you're listening.
It's the first day of school, 8:30 in the morning. Renee Howard leads her group of brand new third graders up a stairway that's survived more than 9 decades being trod on by little feet. At the top of the stairs, the kids turn left into their new classroom.
Alrighty, thank you to those of you who found your spot quietly and haven't touched anything. We want to make sure.
It's a spacious room. The desks are grouped in little work pods. You can see the school's history in the solid wood trim and cabinetry along the walls. The windows look west, out over the soccer field, and a little community garden that Howard and a few parents helped maintain over the summer. Renee Howard is in her third year of teaching at Congress. Before she moved to Grand Rapids, she was a Spanish teacher in the tiny town of Corunna. She has long brown hair. She always wears comfortable shoes. She's an animal lover, a vegetarian, and a Michigan State fan. Ask around the building, and you'll find students love her.
What grade are you?
Fourth.
Fourth? So you had Miss Howard last year? Tell me about Miss Howard. What do I need to know about her?
She's a nice teacher.
She is?
Yeah, she shows us multiplication, addition.
She teaches funny stuff. She brought in her, what was it?
Her snakes.
Yeah, her snakes, and we kind of put them around our neck and pet them. We went
to go visit these students, who had such a good time last year in Mrs. Howard's class. Only 23% of the kids in their class were considered proficient in reading, according to the MEEP. Only 20% were proficient in math.
I'm Bridget Cheney, and my job is the principal at Congress Elementary. Congress Elementary is multicultural and diverse. If you're doing a paper search of Congress, you learn that our rating is not exceptionally high, that our MEEP scores have been trending up the last 3 years, but prior to that were fairly stagnant and low.
From the outside, if you search public information, if you ask around certain neighborhoods, you will come away with one conclusion about Congress Elementary. It's not a good school. Cheney knows the perceptions that are out there.
Academically low, and to use, I'll say a word on the street type word, a rough building. Rough behaviorally, rough academically, and just rough all the way around.
And yet, to the south of Congress sits one of the most vibrant and growing parts of Grand Rapids, the East Hills neighborhood, where you can find a Belgian-inspired microbrewery, a pricey sushi restaurant, boutique shops, and an art gallery, all pretty much across the street from the school. Congress's boundaries include some of the most affluent parts of Grand Rapids. But almost all of the kids at the school come from low-income families. Most middle-class parents don't, or won't, send their kids there. And test scores are a big reason why. Every year, the state makes a top-to-bottom list of schools in Michigan. Elementary school rankings are based entirely on MEEP results. And on that ranking, Congress scored last year in the 11th percentile, meaning it scores lower than 88% of all elementary schools in Michigan.
That 11th percentile speaks volumes to people, because 11th percentile, as compared to somebody not too far from here who's in the 91st percentile, that's huge. You know, that is huge.
I actually know a little bit about the parents who make the decision not to send their kids to Congress, because I live in one of Congress's neighborhoods. And while there are plenty of kids on my street, none of them go to Congress. It's common in my neighborhood to hear about people who pick up everything and sell their house just so they don't have to send their kids to Congress.
I have heard that. Yes.
What was your reaction when you heard that?
Sad. Absolutely very sad, because I don't think there's anyone out there that wants to come to work and be a part of something that is viewed as unsuccessful or viewed as a place that would not be in the best interest of children.
And I don't care if you call it cops and robbers or dogs and cats. We don't play tag to chase.
The first week in Mrs. Howard's class has a lot of lessons about school procedure, how to line up, how to act in the lunchroom, how to act on the playground.
No hands-on behavior. That means no pushing, no tackling.
The students at Congress are given very clear expectations about behavior. Every teacher has the same behavior chart on their wall. Every teacher has the same reward system for good behavior. But third grade is still a place of conflict. One day at lunch recess, some boys are shooting around at the lowered plastic basketball hoops at the back of the playground. A girl named Amira arrives, bouncing a red ball. A boy named Jesse grabs a rebound and shoots, then rebounds again and shoots again. Amira asks for the ball back. Jesse refuses to give the ball back. Amira storms away, crying.
Amira! Here! Okay, get it all ready. I'm glad to get it there.
Amira sits down on a bench, her head in her hands.
You want to talk to me, Amira? You want me to go away?
Okay, you can stay.
I try to ask her what happened.
He took the ball I wanted it back, and then he called me a crybaby.
It upset you?
I feel bad. I always get bullied sometimes. I got bullied in first grade. I got bullied in second grade. No, third grade.
When the bell rings, Amira gathers herself. I ask her whether Jesse might have just wanted to play with her, and she was the one leaving him out. She has none of it.
I don't think
he broke my heart.
He broke my heart, she says. Up in about 10 minutes. We'll hear about a standardized test, something called a Lexile score, and how Jesse had a bad day of his own.
I want nothing more than you to read those books. Those books, look at me, look at me. When you start reading the books you can't read, you will learn to get to be able to read the books you want to read. Look at me, everybody.
When your friends get to read Goosebumps, and you're stuck with Amelia Bedelia. Coming up on State of Opportunity from Michigan Radio. This is State of Opportunity from Michigan Radio. I'm Dustin Dwyer. This hour, the big test.
Okay, maybe everyone could take a seat. We can get our meeting started here.
In December, I did something I've never done before. I went to the annual meeting of my neighborhood association. It was a potluck. I brought soup, and I brought my microphone. The neighborhood newsletter advertised that the big talk for the night would be about how to handle a skunk problem. But that's not why I was there. I was there to talk to people about schools. At the meeting was John Helmholt, the official spokesman for Grand Rapids Public Schools, and Bridget Cheney, principal of our neighborhood school, Congress Elementary, a school where I had spent about 6 weeks on a long-term reporting project. This reporting project. After Cheney finished talking, I noticed a family with a baby slipping out a door at the back of the room.
I know you've got a kid probably trying to run, but I noticed that you stayed exactly as long as the GRPS presentation. Were you hoping to hear something there?
Yeah, just... we were most interested in that. Just we're learning about the whole school system thing. And so, yeah, we are more concerned about school systems than skunks. But
not sticking around for the skunks.
Yeah, we don't have a
so can you tell me what's your name and your son's name?
Yeah, I'm Molly Spence, and this is Caleb.
And how old is he?
He's 9 months.
And you're thinking about schools already?
Yeah, yeah.
So what are you thinking?
Well, we were thinking about schools when we moved because the people we bought the house from moved out for the schools. Like, I think they moved to Forest Hills.
So what were your thoughts then? You're having a kid, you're thinking, are we going to have to move out?
I think we thought that 5 years before he goes to school is a long time, and maybe things will change, and there's some options within the system as well to choose a different school.
Can I get your name?
Yeah, Martin.
So, and it's Spence.
Yep.
Martin Spence. Okay, so
So what did you think of what they said?
Well, it's encouraging. It's always good to hear improvement. I know they've got some spin to it too, but
yeah. I mean, I think coming, we only moved to Grand Rapids 2 years ago, so that was the main thing we heard about schools. Like, the city's really good, there's lots going on, there's lots of stuff to do in the city, and like, it's good transport and so on, and kind of everyone says, but the schools are the things that are the problem.
The schools are the problem. I live two streets over from the Spences. I hear the same things they hear. GRPS schools are no good. Most of it is rumor. The one piece of tangible, real evidence is the test scores. Congress Elementary has low test scores. The unchallenged assumption we take from that is Congress is not a good school, not good enough for our kids. If that's the assumption we make about the school, what assumptions are we making about the kids who go to the school? I want to go back now to a scene we heard a few minutes ago. A scene between a boy named Jesse and a girl named Amira. When Amira sat down on the bench and tearfully told me about being bullied, Jesse walked up. He sat down with the red ball she'd asked for, the ball he had wanted to share. He looked at her, he looked at me. He looked genuinely remorseful, but he didn't say a word. This is not a mean kid. This is not a bad kid. During the first week of class, I noticed a day when Jesse was upset. He was crying. I asked his teacher, Renee Howard, about what happened.
He was feeling like kids were not including him. And for somebody like him, he's very outgoing and he's very kind to most kids. So he takes those things, I'm seeing that it seems he takes those things very seriously and really deeply to heart.
One thing I quickly learned about third grade, there's no avoiding pain. Kids cry every day. But I did not see anything like what the neighborhood rumors had told me to expect from Congress Elementary. I didn't see fights. I didn't hear kids yelling curses at each other or at teachers. 20 minutes after Amira broke down on the playground bench, she was back in class. She turned to me and she said,
"I feel better now.
I feel better now.
I just felt a little sad.
I just felt a little sad." This is something else I would come to learn about Amira. She's never down for long.
What's this dance?
Oh, it's a movie. It's a movie that we watch. It's called Teen Beach Movie.
So how's it go?
It goes like, it's just every time.
When you get to know the real Amira, you'll know that she's bubbly and enthusiastic about everything. She's truthful to a fault. She wears baubles in her hair and her heart on her sleeve. You will not hear about kids like Amira if you rely on a neighborhood rumor mill to inform you about a school. And the things that make Amira a great classmate are not the things that tests do a good job of measuring.
There's no need to rush through your test. Remember, if you're rushing, the test knows and it'll stop and make you start over.
Toward the middle of September, 3 weeks before the MEEP, students at Congress take a different standardized test. It's called the MAP. One is the MEEP, the other's the MAP. It was confusing for me at first, too. But MAP stands for Measures of Academic Progress. It's a computer-based test developed by an organization out of Portland, Oregon.
If you get a screen that says Start Test, you may quietly start.
The kids sit in the dim computer room, focused intently on the reading portion of their MAP test. Amira is on a question about a talking parrot who laughs when she realizes people don't understand animal language. The test asks her to read a passage about the parrot and then answer why the parrot laughed. Amira leans back in her chair, fiddles with her headphone cord. Then she springs forward, putting her fingers on the computer screen to trace the words as she rereads the passage. She stops. She plays with her hair. Then she puts her hands on the mouse and reads the passage one more time. Finally, Amira clicks on an answer. She is thinking about how people are ridiculous. This is the correct answer. Students in Grand Rapids Public Schools take the MAP test 3 times a year. This allows teachers and administrators to gauge student learning throughout the year, unlike with the MEEP, which only comes up once. And because the MAP is on a computer, the results are available immediately. I walk down the hall to Principal Cheney's office, and she's already looking up results from last week's math portion.
So is this a better tool for you than the MEEP?
I prefer it over the MEEP because it's a 3-time per year dipstick. I guess, if you will. Plus, it gives you more, in my opinion, information, because it's there's a lot more to it. There's a lot more information, and it's not so limited in the questions that it asks. So, yeah, I feel it's a better indicator.
Meaning what? Limited how?
The MEEP measures, like third graders are going to be measured on second grade standards from last year. Whereas with the MAP, if you have a child who is, let's say, reading at a fifth grade level, but they're in third grade, they're going to be asked those fifth grade level questions. So it pushes forward to give you a better indicator of where they're at, more than just, yes, they know second grade content.
Does the MEEP have strengths as an indicator that the MAP doesn't?
I think it does. It tests the curriculum that was supposed to be taught the year prior. So it does have good indicators as far as did the teacher get to the curriculum, teach it deeply, and did the kids learn that information. So I do think it has value. I think the value is just different than the MAP.
Critics of the MAP say giving it to students three times a year takes too much time out of classroom instruction. Last year, teachers in Seattle organized a boycott of the MAP and refused to administer the test to their students. They said, among other things, high school students had realized the test had no impact on their grades or whether they went to college, so they bombed the test on purpose. But at Congress, MAP scores are a highlight. Last year, Congress had a bigger growth in MAP scores than any other school at Grand Rapids Public Schools. Strangely, Congress's success on the MAP was not at all advertised anywhere outside the school. If you were a parent deciding whether to send your kid to Congress, you would have no idea that kids there had shown so much growth. You're listening to State of Opportunity on Michigan Radio. I'm Dustin Dwyer. This hour, we're going inside Congress Elementary in Grand Rapids, a school that sits in the 11th percentile on a statewide ranking of test scores. Do low test scores mean it's a bad place for kids? Alan sails across the soccer field as if the air is somehow lighter for him than for everyone else. He steals the ball, tramples his opponent, darts and dodges, finds an open spot, and boots the ball right into the corner of the net. He always hits the corner. On the field, Alan's friends call him Messi, after the Argentine superstar Lionel Messi, one of the greatest to ever play the game. Musa, another third grader, absolutely hates it.
Everybody calls him Messi. That's the thing I hate. Everybody says Messi, Messi, Messi. He's not even Messi.
I thought you and Alan were friends.
We are. But yeah, I don't like the part where they say Messi, 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 Messi. It gets annoying.
They call him Messi because he's so good at soccer?
Yeah, they think he's the best player in this whole school.
Alan has a long sweep of black hair, always perfectly combed and parted at the side. Girls think he's cute. In class, he knows how to stay out of trouble. His friend Dylan spilled the beans to me.
Who's really good at doing stuff but never gets caught? You?
Me and Alan, sometimes we talk a lot, but the teacher doesn't hear us.
¿Español o inglés?
Español.
Okay.
After students at Congress finish their first big assessment of the year, the school schedules parent-teacher conferences. Alan's mom, Mirna, tells Howard she prefers to talk in Spanish so she can better understand what's being said. Howard is a former Spanish teacher.
Tiene un hijo muy amable y me ayuda mucho en la clase.
Howard tells Alan's mom she has a good son. He helps a lot in class. Then they get into Alan's test scores. These scores come from the MAP test we just heard about a few minutes ago. Howard's been looking them over for all of her students, and she wants to talk about where Alan is at academically.
Él está empezando el año más alta que estudiante en el tercero grado.
Alan's scores are really good. Howard says he's starting the year at a higher level than most third graders. Howard tells his mom they want to make sure Alan continues to grow and that class isn't too easy for him. She says soon the third graders will break into reading groups so that the more advanced readers like Alan will get more difficult books. For math, Alan and some of the other third graders will walk across the hall to join the fourth grade class. This won't happen for all math lessons, just the parts of math that Alan and other students have shown they're good at. It's not only individualized by student, but by specific academic skills. And when parents make a decision not to send their kids to a school with low overall test scores, like Congress has, part of the assumption is that these schools can't handle advanced students. Advanced kids won't be pushed. In the case of Alan and a handful of other kids in his class, that assumption is just wrong.
Gracias por venir. Ya sé que no es mucho, pero tiene un buen estudiante.
There is one book series at the Congress Elementary Library every third grader wants to check out, The Diary of a Wimpy Kid. But the library is not a place of chaos. There are rules here.
And now what I do not want you to do is to go all the way back, get a Diary of a Wimpy Kid book, and just check it out like no problem.
One of the rules is you can't check out a book that's above your reading level. Emily Clark, a literacy paraprofessional, lays down the law.
So, third grade, eyes on me. Your number one job is to get a perfect fit, a book that next week you're going to want to recommend to us.
On every kid's library card, there is a number. On every book on the shelf, there is a number. The kids are told to find a book with a number close to the number on their card. Nothing too low, nothing too high. The number on the card is assigned to them based on the MAP test. It's a reading level measure called a Lexile score. Lexile scores are widely used across the country to match kids with reading material. In class, Renee Howard explained to the kids why they use Lexile scores. She said, going above your reading level is like going to the gym and trying to lift weights that are way too heavy.
I want to lift weights.
Oh,
and I saw all these big buff guys and big buff girls lifting these big old weights.
Yeah.
And I went up to those big old weights and I went, oh gosh. And I couldn't even get it off the ground. Am I making my muscles any stronger by doing that?
No.
Am I going to get bigger muscles by doing that, by trying to pick up a weight that's way too heavy? If you're reading a book that is way too hard for you, it is not helping your brain get smarter and stronger.
Lexile scores have been confirmed as a valuable reading tool by various panels of experts, and that's why they're so widely used. But of course, the first thing the kids do when they find out their Lexile score is to show it to their friends and start ranking everyone. And once inside the library, they do everything they can to slip out from the limitations of their number.
Can I read it? I know how to read it. I read at home.
That's also something that's not allowed. Don't go up to the desk with something way out of your Lexile and say, but Miss Clark, I know how to read it. I can read these words.
Yeah, you have to do a book.
No.
Do a try for me. Anybody can read it to me and check it out.
Kids sense a crack in the wall. Do a try for me, says Anne Van Eerden, a volunteer at the school who helps with literacy. Soon every kid is bringing up books way out of their Lexile range. Darius is the first to be shot down.
My little book is so easy.
Alan and Musa tried Diary of a Wimpy Kid and almost get away with it. But Jesse, this is not going well for Jesse.
Look at me in the eyeballs. I want nothing more than you to read those books. Those books, look at me. When you start reading the books you can read, you will learn to get to be able to read the books you want to read. Look at me, everybody.
This explanation is not enough for Jesse. He starts crying. Between sniffles, he keeps trying to prove he understands the book.
Do you know her name? What's her name?
Tim. I do.
Well, what's it called?
Jesse battled his number, his test score, and the score won. This particular scene might have been avoidable, but the reality behind it was not. Jesse knew, and he knew before today, that some kids in his class got to read Goosebumps and American Chillers. He got to read Amelia Bedelia. And even if that was the perfect fit book for him, the book that would most help him improve his reading, it was not the book he wanted.
It wants Jesse. Awesome. It wants Jesse. I'm glad you found the book.
There are critics of the Lexile score system. Critics besides third graders, I mean. These critics say Lexile scores fail to account for the motivation of the reader, how a child's interest in a book can motivate them to focus and comprehend the material, even if some of the text is beyond their level. Lexile scores for books are determined by the length of sentences within the book and the complexity of the vocabulary. Context is not taken into account. The Diary of a Wimpy Kid series uses a lot of creative language and a lot of words that kids might not otherwise come across. And the series has an unusually high Lexile score, higher than The Hunger Games and Twilight, but also higher than Wuthering Heights, The Grapes of Wrath, Tale of Two Cities, All Quiet on the Western Front, Toni Morrison's Beloved, and most Stephen King books. If Lexile scores were the only guide, students at Congress would be able to check out an 1,100-page novel about a supernatural monster that appears in the form of a clown to murder children before they would be able to check out certain books from the Diary of a Wimpy Kid series. But of course, that's absurd. No one would be that careless in how they use a test score. Coming up in about 10 minutes, Meep Day finally arrives.
It's the Meep test. Dun, dun, dun.
We're taking the Meep test today.
Dun, dun, dun.
Good thing I got a good night rest.
You're listening to State of Opportunity from Michigan Radio. This is State of Opportunity from Michigan Radio. I'm Dustin Dwyer. This hour, a program we're calling The Big Test. In the fall, I was allowed to follow along with a group of third-grade students at Congress Elementary in Grand Rapids as they prepared to take a state-mandated standardized test for the first time in their lives.
Oh, I'm trying to throw you off so you're not just counting. Okay.
It's early October, 1 week until the start of the MEEP. Renee Howard is using the smart board at the front of the room to teach a lesson on place value. A smart board works a lot like a tablet computer, except that it's projected onto a whiteboard at the front of the classroom. Howard is using a program that allows her to manipulate different arrangements of digital cubes. She drags out two blocks of cubes, representing 100 cubes each, then a bunch of long stacks of 10 cubes each, then a bunch of single cubes on their own. The question, how many cubes does she have?
Ashley, how many hundreds?
Two.
Two. So what is the value of 200s? Everyone is 200. 200.
From his spot in the middle of the room, Musa sees what's happening on the board and he speaks up.
I don't agree.
Okay. Musa says he disagrees. I know why Musa's going to say he disagrees. I mean, I want you to think, why is Musa going to disagree?
Disagreeing is encouraged in Mrs. Howard's classroom. No hand raising necessary. And I didn't really keep any stats, but it seems that Musa disagrees most often. Anytime Howard tries to pull one over, like she's doing now, Musa is one of the first to catch it and to speak up.
Okay, turn to your neighbor. Why does Musa disagree?
This lesson is really a review of second grade material, but second grade material is exactly what the third grade MEEP measures. Howard noticed from her own testing that a number of kids in the class were struggling with these kinds of place value problems, particularly when the problem plays the trick Howard just played on the board.
Okay, hands up if you can tell me, why does Musa disagree? I heard some really good ideas. Very good ideas. Why does Musa disagree, Jaquela? Because there's a lot of tens. How many tens are there?
14.
If a test shows you two groups of 100 and 14 groups of 10, you better not put a 2 in your hundreds place.
40!
Plus 40. Why 40?
Standardized tests, like the MEEP, take a narrow view of what qualifies as valuable intelligence. The third grade MEEP measures only reading and math. Some kids in Mrs. Howard's class show clear talent in music, dance, drawing, sports. None of those talents will be reflected in their MEEP scores. But there are some kids in the class who do excel at the kinds of things the MEEP tests. And Musa is one of those kids. He's a great student, curious, attentive, sharp. Even at 9 years old, you can tell he's going places. Which is even more amazing when you find out where his family came from. Musa and his four brothers and sisters live in a two-story wooden house about a half mile from Congress Elementary. I visited one morning when the kids were in school. Musa's dad, Jafari, and his oldest brother, Hamadi, We're both sitting on stools in the living room, holding ears of dried corn, cutting the kernels off into a big blue plastic tub. Where do you get the dried corn like this? Just any regular store?
No, I didn't buy it. I grow it in a farm.
So you guys have your own farm?
Yeah.
It's our own.
It's a community farm.
It's a community garden.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I have a children, which is they don't know how to farm, but I used to farm at back home. So whatever I know, I have to teach my children.
Yeah.
So now they know how to farm.
Jafari grew up in the small village of Mogambo, along a river in southern Somalia. When civil war broke out in Somalia in the early 1990s, Jafari says his family was caught in the middle. His ethnic group was too small to even have a side.
Just over there, every day people die and shooting each other. If you have nice things, so people stabs you and say, put down. If you didn't put down, they're going to shoot you. So you have to leave your stuff to them and go to survive by yourself.
Jafari says he and his wife had three children in Somalia. The youngest, Rahema, was just 8 months old when all three children were struck by the polio virus. Without medical attention and without medicine, Jafari says all three children died. Shortly afterward, Jafari and his wife made it to a refugee camp in Kenya. They lived there for 12 years. They started their family over, had three more kids, Hamadi, Rahema, and Jama. They built a home with mud bricks they made themselves. They applied to be allowed into the United States. In June of 2003, they got off of a plane and started their new life in Grand Rapids. As refugees, they were set up with an apartment. Jafari speaks five languages. None of them are very common in Grand Rapids, but Swahili was common enough. They managed to get by. Then one day, he found out he owed rent on the apartment. He'd never paid rent before. The homes he'd lived in, he'd built himself. Now in America, he didn't have a job. He didn't have money. So the agent assigned to help him took him to get government assistance from the Department of Human Services.
They gave me a translate in a phone. And I asked them to give me... Tangawadi, tangawadi.
Amani...
I asked to get this stuff, which is we can cut the trees.
Like a saw?
Yeah, like a saw.
To build my own house. And they said, why? Why you ask that? And I said, I have family. And the house I live is not mine. So I don't work. So that house needs to pay it. So if I didn't pay, they're going to kick me out with my family. I need to build my house. And they told me, don't worry, you're going to find a job. If you didn't find a job, the agency is going to help you to pay the rent.
They didn't give you a saw?
No.
They didn't give me a saw.
Coming to the U.S., Jafari and his family had to change their ideas about what it would take to survive. They'd always been able to take care of themselves. But now Jafari says he knows his kids need something else, an education.
I don't have education, but I'm trying to help my children to get education. I need my children to become intact. I need them to be a doctor or lawyer or whatever. If they didn't be in today, maybe their children they're going to be. And I don't have money. I'm not rich. But I'm going to try to help them.
So finally, I ask Jafari if he knows anything about the test his son Musa is about to take in 1 week, the MEEP test. He says he doesn't know anything about it. I ask how he knows whether Musa is doing well in school. Jafari says he talks to the teachers. You're listening to State of Opportunity from Michigan Radio. I'm Dustin Dwyer. This hour, we're following along with the third grade class from a low-scoring elementary school. We're counting down the days until they take the state-mandated MEEP test. And we're getting close.
We start first thing in the morning with our MEEP test tomorrow. We've talked about it and talked about it and talked about it. It's here tomorrow. Be on time because we start first thing in the morning. If you are not on time,
Monday, October 7th, the day before Mrs. Howard's third graders take the MEEP test for the very first time in their lives. That afternoon, Congress holds an assembly for the third, fourth, and fifth grade classes, kids age 8 to 11. They're reminded that the test can take a long time, that they can't get up and walk around or talk or go to the bathroom, except during specific breaks. They're told to read each question carefully, don't rush, eliminate silly answers on multiple choice questions first, be logical, get a good night's rest, eat a good breakfast. Earlier in the year, I'd given Renee Howard an audio recorder to take home. I asked her to record her thoughts on the eve of the big test.
Alrighty, so it is the night before the MEEP, or the day before the MEEP, actually in the afternoon after school, and I'm really excited for the kids to take the MEEP tomorrow, but at the same time, I'm kind of apprehensive. You know, it's, you know, that old saying of putting all your eggs in one basket. And I feel like sometimes that is what the state does with the MEEP, is they put all of our eggs in the MEEP basket, and it's their one window into our students, and really there's so much more to our students than the MEEP. It'll be interesting. I wish that there was a more comprehensive look at our kids. I mean, that's what we're expected to do as teachers, is look at the kids as a whole and their strengths and the things that they're capable of achieving, and I wish that there was a better way to show the scope of Congress kids, other than just one test. So yeah, we'll see how it goes tomorrow.
Then, the big day finally arrives.
It's the MEEP test. Dun, dun, dun.
We're taking the MEEP test today.
Dun, dun, dun. Look, dude, I got a good night rest.
In her office, the principal, Bridget Cheney, has printed off a list of students for each classroom who might be right on the line between the MEEP's proficiency targets. The MEEP has strict rules about how the test can be administered, and teachers are not allowed to help, but they can pull some kids out to take the test in smaller groups. They can rearrange seating within the classroom to make kids more comfortable. Cheney shows Howard a list of third graders to look out for.
These kids I would surely either keep yourself right by, so you can encourage and, you know, stay on task, that type of thing. This is reading, obviously, what you're taking today. Or you could send these with Cheryl to make sure that they're focused and all of that, and you just pay attention to. So it's up to you, however you want to do it. But
Howard takes the list up the stairs to her classroom. On the classroom door, someone has taped candy bars and a note that says, "Happy birthday."
It's your birthday?
It's my birthday.
Today?
Today on MEEP Day.
Happy birthday.
She has just a few minutes to make sure the room is set up. Then it's back downstairs to get the third graders, get their backpacks and coats hung up outside the classroom, listen to the morning announcements, then a short pep talk.
We talked yesterday with Mrs. Cheney about some awesome, awesome ideas while we're taking this test. The first thing we're going to do is try
our best.
Try your best.
After the talk, the kids all have a bathroom break. Howard tells them to go if they can. This will be the last chance for a few hours. Part of what makes the MEEP a standardized test is that there are standardized testing procedures, including a rule that no one other than the test proctor is allowed in the room during the test. That means after 6 weeks of floating around the school, being able to pop into any room at any time, there's finally one part of the school's operations that I'm not allowed to see. When we started planning this documentary, we wanted to air it in January because that's usually when the results of the MEEP come out. This year that didn't happen. Results have been delayed. And unless the decision is somehow reversed, this will be the final year for the MEEP test. The test has been in use for 4.5 decades in Michigan. State lawmakers are currently debating what to replace it with, though it looks likely next year's statewide test will be the Smarter Balanced Assessment. The SBA will be computer-based, adaptive, and there will be options for schools to take it more than once a year. In other words, it'll be a lot like the MAP test that Congress students already take and on which they've shown exceptional growth. Michigan's new assessment may give a more accurate picture of what happens at Congress. But with the delay in this year's results and the unresolved questions about how schools will be ranked next year, Bridget Cheney, the principal at Congress, is still stuck with the number we talked about at the beginning of this hour. Congress, for now, is still in the 11th percentile among elementary schools in Michigan.
So then if someone listens to this and says, if I'm not supposed to judge it based on the top-to-bottom ranking, how do I judge it? What do you tell them to do?
I tell them, first of all, to come visit us, see what we do every day. Absolutely talk to us about the curriculum, talk to us about Common Core State Standards that we're implementing, and just have them talk to other parents who have had their children here for a period of time, who can tell them, you know, what we do and the proficiency levels of those kids.
I walked around our area, which is downtown, and there's a couple schools around here, but everybody talks about how bad the inner city schools are. You know, growing up as public schools.
Rebecca's daughter, Vera, is in Mrs. Howard's third grade class.
I went to Congress one day, and I talked to the principal just to get a feel of what it was like, Mrs. Cheney, and I walked in there. There was lots of art on the wall. It smelled like my school smelled when I was young. It just felt different. There was diversity all over the place. So we went there, talked to Mrs. Cheney. I enrolled her. When it comes to schools, I think being engaged by their teacher is the most important part to me. To be a better person, to learn how to do things. Not so much the scores.
I think the teachers up there is more caring.
Cornelia's son, Marquan, is in Mrs. Howard's third grade class.
I don't know, I think everybody up there is just, you know, wonderful, they helpful. If you need anything, you know, they do their best to try to help you out. One of the teachers even do things with the kids after school. She came and got them this summer and took them to Chuck E. Cheese. So, you know, it's just, I don't know, a whole different vibe down there.
We moved into the neighborhood thinking, hey, we'll send our daughter to neighborhood school, and then nobody from the neighborhood sends their kids to the neighborhood school. So it's a little weird like that, but I just think that they don't know that it's fine, it's good.
Wendy's daughter, Anna, is in the first grade at Congress.
I think what our neighborhood schools need as much as anything is the good parents who are involved and who care to be there. I think that's what they need as much as anything, is for as many people as possible who care to be there, to really know what's going on, instead of just assuming they know based on whatever reputation.
When I take them over there, I didn't see anything but to them. So it's nice.
Jafari's son, Musa, is in Mrs. Howard's third grade class.
And then to learn to be a good student, that is accept you.
I expected this story to be very different. I expected a school with such low test scores had to be in some way a mess, a bad place. I expected there would be people who cared, but they would be fighting a losing battle. I expected to hear what was wrong with the school, the kids, the families. Instead, I came out wondering, what's wrong with the test? I expected not to hear many parents say they love their child's school. But I heard that over and over. It doesn't mean that Congress Elementary is the perfect school. It doesn't mean every parent should forget about standardized test scores, or that they should assume all low-scoring schools are great. What it means, I think, is that we can't rely on test scores alone to make a judgment about a school or about its kids. It means we have to look deeper. Tamar Charney is the executive producer of State of Opportunity. Sarah Hewlett edited this documentary. Vincent Duffy is our news director. The State of Opportunity team is Sarah Alvarez, Jennifer Guerra, Kimberly Springer, and I'm Dustin Dwyer.
Hey, Yusuf. two?
Nothing.
How was that test yesterday?
It wasn't bad.
It wasn't bad. You said you weren't ready for it. You said you didn't want it.
Yeah, it wasn't bad.
It turned out okay?
Support for State of Opportunity comes from the W.K. Kellogg Foundation, a partner with communities where children come first.